You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend. And Tracy, we are back. It's Saturday. And believe it or not, I heard from an old friend 2 days ago by the name of John DiNardo.
Oh, yeah.
You may have heard of him. He was with SF Signal.
Once or twice. Yes, I have.
Yeah. So that blew me away because usually we just communicate through reels at this point. We just send each other reels back and forth.
The love language of memes.
Yes. Yeah. And but no. Phone rang in the middle of a reel, and it was him, and we had a nice little chat, and it got me pumped and ready to have some nice chats this weekend as well.
Absolutely, and right on the heels of Worldcon, too, so we know that at least some of our guests will be pumped up in their own way from that, which is always cool.
Yeah.
And of course, Worldcon, you know, you've got the Hugo Awards. It's a big year for lots of different authors and publications. Congratulations to Neil Clark for best author, best editor short form, and Uncanny Magazine for best semi-prosine. And on that subject, we have our Uncanny Magazine third nerd supporter from year 12, which is not this year's Kickstarter, but last, William Rayon. It is lovely to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be with you.
So for those folks who have difficulty placing accents but are nevertheless intrigued by them, from whence are you joining us?
So I'm French and I live in France near Paris. So that's where I'm joining from.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Fantastic. So what brought you, I'm interested in the backstory on this, what brought you to the Uncanny Magazine Kickstarter in the first place?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure. It was several years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was probably through somebody on the internet, maybe Twitch. It could be because of Will Wheaton, because he's somebody I've been following for more than 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And so every time he posts something or I see him doing something, I follow what he does. It could be from him because I know he has some kind of relationship with Uncanny.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uncanny. So that could be that. But I'm into crowdfunding for so many things, I don't remember what brings me to which.
I'm very similar because I've done a lot of backing of projects on Kickstarter. And sometimes it can be really, really frustrating because I backed a bunch of projects just before we veered into the darkest timeline and all these tariffs started happening and all my Kickstarters started dying on the vine. Mm. It's fun. It's fun to back a project and see it kind of come to fruition.
And you have, I think, a even more intimate experience of what it means to provide backing and support to a creative project and see it come about, because part of your life as a nerd is as a film producer. So can you walk us through that a little bit?
So when I said that Will Wheaton matters to me, it kind of traces back to him. But the real story began in 2019 in Seattle. Mm-hmm. I was at Comic-Con in Seattle meeting people I knew from Twitch. And then I met that lady who had been on a video game from a company that was related to the Twitch channel I was following in Seattle. And it turned out that she started a career in cinema right after that. And she came to London. And I kept following what she was doing. I backed several of her films, of her short films. So some of them, like And Then She Did Before, starting in the London Film School. And then she did a graduation film, which is called Divine Intervention. Mm-hmm. And I was very proud of that film in particular. And that's probably one of the reasons I kept doing it after that, because it's a great film, great location. And I found that I'm interested in backing people from marginalized communities, as you would say in the US. Mm-hmm. And most of the cast was transgender or you know, otherwise LGBTQ+. So I'm very proud of that, of making a statement in a way with that particular film. But I've had films from Indian students, so Indian directors, and people from, I've met people from all over the world there in London, really. A lot of people go to London to study film at London Film School. And it's a great thing. It's a great thing to be part of that, not just the funding part, which is fun, but also meeting people and being on shoots. I'm not really a movie buff. So I had no idea before the end of 2024 of what it was to be on a set. So it's been awesome. I mean, it's awesome to help creators, whatever they're doing. And it's also awesome to be part of it, not just through money, but being there with them.
It's a completely different culture, really.
Yeah, for sure. I have a work that has nothing to do with being creative. I mean, you're not supposed to be creative. And I have nothing to do either with working on short-term projects like this, where you work with a team for a few days sometimes, and then you go to something else. So your colleagues change every few weeks or every few months. And I'm not used to that at all. And it's a very different life. And when you're on a short shoot, when people are there for one day or two, they have to solve every issue right in the moment. And sometimes at my work, or most of the time, I have at least a few days to solve an issue. In that case, an issue comes up, you solve it. Or maybe you don't do the thing you were planning to do because you find that you cannot do it, but you don't have the luxury of waiting another 2 days or 3 days because you won't be there anymore.
it's always been amazing to me that a film, no matter the length of the film, employs so many people. And it does spur creativity and innovation, to your point, because they have to figure out how to do the thing, right? You look at the reason we have ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, is because George Lucas wanted to do stuff that no one had ever done before. And so he had to hire people and say, hey, figure out how to do this. And then they figure out how to do it in order to make, you know, the big movies. And that's where ILM comes from.
Yeah, that's something that surprised me as well, to see so many people, even so many people involved with the camera. There is sound, there is lighting, but even with the camera, I was under the impression that the director was holding the camera and doing everything, and nope, that's not how it worked. So, I learned a lot, and I think, yeah, for somebody like me, there's a lot to learn in that environment, and seeing how everybody is doing their own things, how everybody has a part to play, a role to play on the set. And people usually seem to know what they have to do. There's the lighting people, they move their light from somewhere to somewhere else, and I see no instructions. So people know in advance what they're going to do. So another thing that surprised me, to see that actors and technical people don't really get together that much. They have separate rest places to rest. They have, that surprises me. And with my role on the set, I could mingle with anybody.
Sure.
As long as I was not getting in the way. As I'm used to saying, my main job here is to not get in anybody's way. And sometimes I fail. But it's really awesome to do that. And I've not had the same experience with other kind of project, but I'm lucky that it's happening in London. It's very close. Recently, I supported the Kickstarter for the Guild reunion film.
Oh, yes.
Because, again, Will Wheaton and Felicia Day and Dick and Sandra were so important to me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to fund that, but there was a tier where you would be on set, or you would be an actor, and nope, I'm not going to the US these days. and it would have been a lot of money too, but
yes.
So I made a comment to that effect, and there was a Canadian who reacted to my message and said, I'm not going to the US either. Could you do something similar, but without the going to the US part? And nope.
Nope.
So,
yeah.
You know, sorry, Tracy, I was just going to say, the Guild hit when I was big into World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. And that's when the Guild kind of happened. And I was definitely caught up in all that culture at the time, and just thought it was wonderful and hilarious. So I'm glad to see that she's back and she's doing something with mm-hmm. the Guild again. I know that that's kind of bounced around quite a bit. What is Will Wheaton doing as part of it? Is he doing something as part of the Guild, or is he just like helping her promote it?
He's reprising his role of Fox from season 3 onward, I believe.
Yeah.
Because right. they were friends.
That's right. Gosh, it's been so long since I've seen that, since I've watched it. Because I think, like I said, it bounced around. Like at one point, I forget, like it went to like a, I want to say it went to like a streamer, and that was the only place you could watch it for a little while. And I didn't have that particular mm-hmm. Subscription model.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's Amazon sure Prime now. Thing now.
Is it on Amazon Prime?
I think okay. so. I mean, so many things are.
Yeah. They tend to eat everything and swallow it. And
that is a reality. Yeah. But I do think what the Guild is such an interesting entry point for you into this like larger creative culture of fandoms and things, because the entire point of the Guild story is figuring out like, you've got these two worlds that all these characters are navigating, the world of their friendship that exists within the game, and also the world of navigating their everyday lives, and that both of them can be rich and complicated and full of challenges, and in many ways, like, equally meaningful and equally impactful.
Yeah, that was intriguing. And maybe it was not as true in the Guild as in other shows I've watched later that were important to me as well, mm-hmm. how the characters are people like me, more like me than actors. And really what brought me into this, what hooked me, was seeing people having jobs like me, not mainly actors, mm-hmm. Doing role-playing games on Twitch.
Yeah.
And I think even overcoming kind of stage fright. They were actors already, but they had not done that on the internet before. And mm-hmm. I can't overstate how important it's been to see what we would call representation. People like me doing something I didn't think I'd be able to do. And I don't think that I'm a bit similar to that thing to them.
Yeah, yeah.
You keep mentioning Twitch, and I dipped my toe into Twitch, but not as deep as some other folks have. When you say role-playing games, are you watching actual play, like TTRPGs, or are you watching people playing video games?
So that started with Geek and Sundry. So they started sure. on YouTube, and then they branched to Twitch. And on Twitch, they had that show called Critical Role.
Yep.
And that's the first RPG I watched. And it was also an opportunity for me to start understanding English spoken normally, because I was used to watching MSNBC, things like that. But people sure. speak slowly and they articulate and it's easy to understand. But when people speak normally, it's harder. And when you hear people playing a role-playing game for a few hours, it doesn't matter if you don't understand every word. You just follow one sentence or two in 5 or 6 hours, it doesn't matter. And so from then I moved to other channels, because Lucas Hubank, who had been the showrunner for Geek and Sundry, moved to Seattle, created his own channel there. And that's what really hooked me, Hyper RPG, what he did in Seattle and what the people... Yeah. We stayed in Seattle when we moved back to LA and we did Geek Space TV. That's what really hooked me, because again, these people were in Seattle and they were not only actors, as they were not only interested in being actors. So I fit closer to them. And that's how, because they were involved with Shadowrun, that's how I met people who had been involved in Shadowrun again and who had been involved in their channel, that I went to Comic-Con and met Ravenna, who was a graphic artist on the game and then became a filmmaker. So yes, I watch a lot of role-playing games, and the latest Swiss channel I was following, but I've kind of stopped because I no longer have the health to get up at 1 a.m. it's a Trooper SJP's channel. So he did something awesome as well. An American putting you in the middle of the occupation in Paris in the early 1940s. That was really awesome. And so many people do so many awesome things on Twitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff on Twitch. And I love that the sort of connections that you made. It's like one thing leads to another and leads to another and leads to another. And it just each step along the way kind of broadens your exposure to fandom. And mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, it's very similar with me because I started listening to actual play. I have a hard time watching them for mm-hmm. some reason. I don't know why, but I prefer to listen to them.
Okay.
And maybe it's because then I can like be walking around the house and doing stuff and just have my little, you know, I say my little, but I got it sitting here, my Bluetooth speaker going.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I can carry that and set it down as I'm cleaning the kitchen or something, and I can have something going. But that's kind of, you know, how I started getting back into TTRPGs myself, was like listening. And I didn't listen to Critical Role. I still don't listen to Critical Role. I don't know why. My really good friend loves Critical Role to this day. He's a huge fan of Critical Role. Every time I see him, he's telling me something that happened on Critical Role. Mm-hmm. But I started listening to the smaller ones, you know, like Glass Cannon and different ones. And that just kind of got me. So I guess what I'm saying is same kind of connections, right? I start listening to something and then that got me wanting to play again. And then that got me going to conventions again. So great. Tracy and I were talking before you jumped on that I had just gone to Tacticon, which is a local gaming convention.
Yeah.
So it's just cool that, you know, you take those steps and it just keeps broadening your exposure to these things. And then you go to these things and then you see people who are just like you, right, who are enjoying this as well. I've always loved that. I thought that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So when you find yourself, William, being attracted to a project, whether it's something that you decide you want to become involved in film, helping to produce and helping to make happen, what are there common denominators for you, common features that you've noticed, and what draws your attention and makes you want to be involved?
So I touched on it a bit. So the way it happened is, I see a lot of people. I went to the LFS showcase for several years, so I meet a lot of people from the school. I meet people on the shoot, so they contact me with projects. So that's how I get in touch with new projects. So usually they approach me with a pitch and the script, and I read the script, and I love stories, so I tend to get immersed in the stories, and I become kind of involved in the story. So I make comments on like, would it make sense to do this rather than that? Or how would you put these words into pictures? Mm-hmm. So the themes would be really anything. If usually I love the stories I read. So what can add to my interest is, again, this aspect of this marginalized community. There was a film about, I don't remember, I think it was a stripper.
Oh, yeah.
So a scene in the life of a stripper. So I was like, yeah, that's something I want to help bring to light, because it was obviously not mocking. It was insightful, but not mocking. It was touching. And yeah, so could be the film itself, could be the filmmaker. One of the films, the director is French. She's at the London Film School as well, but she was filming with people from a poor community in London. So the actors were not professional actors, and they were from that poor neighborhood. So I liked that aspect.
Yeah. A lot of perspectives that you might not have been asked to think about before. A lot of new material for your own perspectives.
That's what science fiction does too, in my opinion. That's what the best science fiction does, is it exposes you to things that you wouldn't normally be exposed to, and it kind of makes you think, right? Mm-hmm. Makes you reconsider your preconceived notions.
I think of science fiction is kind of, it introduces you to contemporary themes, to things that happen here and now, but it disguises the things. And it's when you realize that it's not about then and there, but here and now, that you realize, that hits, because it's much closer to home than I first thought. And I think that's really clever when you do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My students, the juniors I'm teaching right now, I'm grading a, yes, I'm grading a set of papers where I asked them to tell me about something they had to read for a class, any class in their past, where they anticipated they would not like reading this thing, either because they had heard about it and felt that it had a reputation they didn't like, or, you know, it was really long, or whatever their biases were. And it's always really interesting for me to read about the books that surprised them, the things that they went into thinking, this is not for me, this is not something that will interest me, and how it sneaks in some ways, past those feelings of resistance into their actual lives. One student was writing about George Orwell's 1984. And how her family was originally from the Soviet Republic, and she ended up moving. When she was 8 years old to the United States after it had become, you know, the nominal Russian democracy, and how she had this sort of strange feeling as she was looking at world events by way of what Russia is about now in Ukraine, and also living in the United States in the world of the Trump administration and Project 2025 and so on, and suddenly feeling very much as if the totalitarian world of 1984 is not theoretical. It's not merely imaginative. There's students writing about how, you know, they were asked to read Hamlet in eighth grade and ended up realizing that they too are never sure what choice to make and what do I do with that. Not necessarily a lot of science fictional responses from them, but a lot of responses were that remind me about what you're talking about, William, this feeling of encountering a perspective that isn't one that you had encountered before, and figuring out what about it is interesting and compelling. Yeah. So you mentioned when we were first getting started that one of the projects that really got you involved in and committed to wanting to continue to produce was Divine Intervention. So what about that project in particular really sticks with you and makes you proud still?
I mean, one of the aspects is that it won at least one prize, so I'm happy with that. Mm-hmm. I got to meet the director, because I had met even before that. I got to meet the cast. The last person from the cast I met a few weeks ago because of another thing in which they were, and I got to talk to them. So, and I mean, it's a bit silly, but one of the main actresses is not tall at all. But in the film, she has such a commanding presence that I thought she was tall. And then I watched the film again after meeting her in person. And I was like, yeah, she's not tall. It shows in the film that she's not tall. They're not hiding that she's not tall, but she really looks tall. So that's a thing. But yes, really meeting the people is the best thing. I was not on the shoot. I could not make it. But yeah, meeting the people, knowing how things go. And that particular actress, her last name is the last name of a colleague I had 25 years ago. So she told me, yeah, that's a Huguenot name. So it's not surprising that I have the same name as a French person, but they're not related. So yes, and it's gorgeous. Another thing is Ravenna booked a gorgeous place to shoot. So we have a place with these angels, and it's really, really gorgeous. And she mentioned it when we talked about it. She said that it would be expensive, that it was part of the reason she needed as much money as she needed for it. So yeah, that was one of these films where I did a little more than just funding, because I was involved before it was shot a bit, and because then afterward I got to meet most of the people who were in the film. And also, again, the fact that Ravenna hired purposefully people from the LGBTQ plus community, that was a plus for me, really. To support people who I know don't always get fair treatment in life.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of... You have me thinking about something that I was talking to my friends about, because I was talking about the influences of American music on British, European, and specifically the Beatles, right? I was talking about the Beatles because I love the Beatles, and I'll talk about the Beatles all day and night, to the point that I'm wearing a Rubber Soul shirt right now as we are recording this. I started rewatching the anthology series because they did an anniversary edition of the anthology series, and so I was watching that. And one of the things we were talking about was with my friends. What, like I said, there was all of this blues influence on British music, and my friends are younger than I am. I've got a few years on them. And they said, I've always wondered, like, why is that? And I said, well, it's because they were so horribly mistreated in America that they would go to Europe and they would go to Britain where they weren't horribly mistreated, because there were no Jim Crow laws and there were no discrimination the way you had in the American South. And they could go to a club and they could play a club, and they could go to a hotel and stay in the hotel. They didn't have to go to a different hotel because this hotel won't let them stay there, and they couldn't eat in this restaurant and blah, 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 blah. So they would go there, and number one, they would be treated better. Number two, they would actually be paid a decent amount of money to play their music. And the audiences were mixed because it was just, that's the way it was. And so you had all these people listening to their music, and their music became really, really popular there, and then influenced, guess who? John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, Mick Jagger, Robert Plant, Eric Clapton, like all of these British musicians who listened to this music because they were exposed to a completely different culture, a completely different type of music and people. So when you're talking about this and you're saying, you know, it's like it's that exposure that's really, really important, right? Because otherwise we live in our little bubbles and our little worlds. And then especially now with all the social media crap, you can essentially live your life without ever talking to someone who has a different point of view, which I think is terrible. Anyway, sorry. I'll get off my soapbox.
Yeah. I think that, I'm thinking back to Uncanny Magazine here, and I don't know, have you had Space unicorns, indeed. Have you had occasion to read much of Uncanny's content? Is it a place that you have gone for fiction in the past?
It's a bit shameful. So I used to read a lot, but I don't read that much anymore.
So I've not really
read a lot of it.
Yeah. And, well, the question I was going to ask, which we can ask in a bigger, broader way instead. I was going to ask if there was an Uncanny Magazine story that you would love to see treated as a short film, but maybe instead, is there a particular favorite from your reading days that you would love to see someone try to work with in film, and you would love to help make them happen?
That's a good question.
Your mind always goes blank when you need it.
I will be a bit cheeky. I did write a few very, very short stories. So that would be great if one of mine were made into a film.
Directorial world. Hint, hint.
But I don't think they're really good. Now, I did read a lot of short stories back in the day. So it's something that came from a Geek and Sundry as well. And there's a lot of these stories that I loved. So I don't have... Well, there are a series of stories that were written by, I believe it was somebody who was involved in some kind of movement in the 60s in the US, and the stories seem to be set in the 60s, and there's a lot of drugs and alcohol and sex and things like that. Yeah. And it was written in a way that I really liked. I got to exchange with the author a bit, and then he closed his account, so I don't know what became after that. So hopefully there was nothing wrong happening to him. So one of these stories, that would probably, there was great material there. I mean, I've read a lot of stories that I loved, but that's what remains, like maybe how many years? At least 6 years later, maybe more than that.
You know, it's funny that you said you wrote some short stories yourself, and they're not any good. That just means you're a writer. Because at the time, you wrote them, and you probably thought, wow, this is great. This is the best thing I've ever written in my life. And then a couple of days later, you read it and said, what was I thinking? What was I thinking? That means you're a writer. That's like the literal definition of a writer anymore. You write something, it's the best thing ever. You reread it, you go, oh man, I got to get that out the door. You reread it, and you're like, ah, what was I thinking? This is horrible. Yeah.
Actually, my process is a bit different. I write about a page, and then by the time I reach the end of the page, I'm so familiar with what I have written and rewritten, that I'm disgusted by it. Not necessarily because
take a couple days.
So I usually don't look at it. There is some kind of, I don't know if there is a name for that, but some kind of interference when it starts being in my memory and I read it again.
Yeah.
When I was involved with the Hyper RPG, I used to help write stories that were read before every episode of that particular show. So that was part of what they called the meet again. And so I would wake up very early, like 1 a.m. or even 1 a.m. to read, to hear them read the story. And when it came time to read what I had written, I could not hear it. I hated hearing it. Not necessarily because it was bad, even though it probably was not that good, but because of the way it resonated with what I had in my memory.
In your own mind. That,
If it makes you feel any worse, Tracy can't listen to her own podcast that she's a part of.
It's true. Since I started co-hosting a number of years ago, the only episodes of Functional Nerds I've listened to were a couple where I wasn't available and Patrick was hosting alone and I wanted to catch up. Same. I probably shouldn't admit to this on a material record, but what the hey. Occasionally as teachers, you're asked to like record your classrooms and like write little reflections on what you did. I almost always fake it. I almost always pretend that I watched the recording and I just go off of my memory of things of that went right or went wrong and write my little reflection from there because I can't stand to, yeah. It's a weakness. Yeah. I struggle. one thing we won't struggle with, though, is picks of the week. So maybe we'll do that.
We'll get to picks of the week. Just hold your horses. We'll get there. Before we do, I wanted to talk to you for just a second about $5. I know. You're shaking your head now. Look, they say that $5 doesn't go as far as it used to, and they're kind of right. Can you get a cup of coffee for $5 these days? Some of you are saying yes, like a black coffee, right? You could get a small black coffee probably for $5 somewhere, but you're not going to be able to get one of the fancy ones with the stuff in it. Shot of this, shot of that. Those are going to cost you a lot more. So that $5 is not going to get you that. But you know what? There's a place where you can get a ton of value for just $5 a month, and that is patreon.com/functionalnerds. Let me break it down for you. $5 a month, and you gain access to things like our super secret Facebook group, which has been going on forever, our brand new and popular so far. I'm enjoying it. A lot of other people are enjoying it. But our brand new Discord server, which is also super secret. Can't get there from anywhere else. You have to be a patron of the Functional Nerds to get there. You get a monthly video hangout. And those are really cool. That's me and Tracy host. And the patrons like you, if you become one, get to hang out with us. And we all chat. And we talk about the things that are going on in the world. And have a little bit of a nerdy conversation. We talk about books sometimes. And movies and other things. So you get that for $5. And on top of all of that, one of our most popular things that listeners absolutely love, you get the Patreon exclusive episode of the pod that we call Just Us. That is just me and Tracy talking about stuff. And by the way, if you joined today, you would get all the back episodes of that, I believe. Which is kind of cool. And that's all for $5 a month. I mean, come on. What are you waiting for? Head over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and help us keep the lights on and keep this thing we call the Functional Nerds Podcast rolling on. While you do that, you don't have to like pull your earbuds out or stop listening. We're just going to jump right into the other thing that listeners really, really love. It's called Picks of the Week.
All right. So, Patrick, what's your pick today, and is it the Beatles?
It's not the Beatles.
Oh, okay.
However, I do love the anthology, and what they've done is they've added some stuff because of Peter Jackson's work. Mm-hmm. They were able to add some things to it and kind of expand it a little bit. So it's always fun. No, I decided since we were kind of talking about crowdfunding that I would talk about one of the projects that I backed.
Nice.
So one of the projects that I backed that finally came in, I've been a little depressed about it because it's been first they got hit with tariffs and then they got hit with production problems and then they got hit with more tariffs. And then it just I was at the point where I was wondering if it was ever going to fund and do anything. I I don't back films and stuff because I am, because just the way my brain works. But I will back what I think are cool projects. And at this time, I was into maps for TTRPGs. And so there was one that I thought was kind of cool, and it was called Realm Brew Magnetic Tiles. And they finally sent me some stuff. So this is – I'm going to show you. This is okay. One of their large tiles. I'll take some pictures and put them somewhere. But this, you know, is something. And then what you can do is you can have these magnetic tiles.
So you've got kind of like a customizable map.
Yeah. And they're all double-sided. And so there's, you know, there's water for the dungeon. Mm-hmm. And then you have like a regular dungeon tile.
Okay.
And then you also have blank dungeon tiles. Mm-hmm. And they all have a pattern on them. So you can put your little minis on there and stuff. And they also have a piece that will cover them. That's called Fog of War. Okay. So if you're playing a game where they can only see as far as their torchlight goes,
then you know how far that is.
You can peel across, you can peel each one off as you're going. And like I said, they fit together like a magnet, you know, when you're doing stuff, they just kind of snap together and
that's cool, and
you can build something with them. And they're doing another Kickstarter now, and they're basically saying, based on what we learned, and I believe I could be horribly wrong as I'm going really high with my voice, I believe they're located in France.
Oh.
I believe it's a French company, which is a coincidence that just dawned on me, okay? I'm just saying. I know for a fact they're in Europe somewhere. They might be a French company based on what I've seen before, which was little buttons to translate things because they were talking about that. Mm. But they're doing a new Kickstarter now called what we're going to do this better based on what we learned with the last one. You know, as far as production and stuff, because they at one point they redid a bunch of these because they did not like the quality of them and they didn't charge us for it. They're like, we're just going to redo these because these suck and we're just going to redo them all. So they did that. They also provided there's overlays and things that you can put on these. So like if there's a trap or if there's a chest or there's something. And these are also you can draw on them with dry erase markers. So they are doing another Kickstarter now. But I really, really like them. And now I'm trying to figure out how to incorporate them into my personal gaming. So Realm Brew Magnetic Map Tiles.
Very cool.
is the name of the
product.
Whatever they're called. The product.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And they're just really cool. So that's my pick this week.
Fantastic. So Leon, how about you?
I didn't really think about it. I did think about it a few days ago, but I don't remember. There is this funny thing that happened. So one of the directors I met in London is somebody I'm still in touch with, and I've been to the premiere of one of his recent films recently, and he's from the US. That's one director who's in London, was from the US. Mm-hmm. And he talked to me about his own podcast, and he told me about it, and I watched an episode with one of the directors whose project I backed, and they mentioned several projects I backed since then. So it's a bit funny that podcasts are coming back right now.
Yeah.
And so that's United Films, I believe, the podcast, and by Greg Randolph. And that was that's insightful about the film world and the student from London Film School. I'm just checking, hopefully that's here. The United Film Podcast, yeah, that's it.
Okay.
So, United Film Podcast. Nice. I have to check that out. Thank you.
I am happy that other people are starting podcasts now and we're not the only one.
It's a burden for us to have been the only one all this time. how much we have carried on our back.
I hear Sean Duke might start one soon, so.
Yeah, I don't think he's busy though. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it should be easy for him. Yeah. We love you, Sean. So we've been talking a lot about producing and the act of involving yourself in things you love or helping things you love become things that other people can be involved in. And it's put me in mind of, so my kids, this is well-known information to longtime listeners, are both named after characters from Roger Zelazny's Chronicles of Amber. And for the longest time, my husbeast has been working my son over to get him to actually read the books for which he is named. And this summer yielded some progress as far as that goes. And part of the bait for it was that there's some parallels between the world building of Zelazny's Chronicles of Amber and the gameplay and world building of the sort of larger Elden Ring video game universe, which... you know, is very important to my son and kind of became bait for him. But because my husbeast was rereading the Chronicles of Amber and my son was finally digging into them and reading them, I was like, well, don't want to be left behind. I also will reread them, which puts me in mind, of course, of Stephen Colbert, who has been a great fan of Tolkien and Zelazny and lots of other big voices in fantasy for a very long time. And the ongoing rumor of him underwriting and producing a television series, The Chronicles of Amber. But putting all of that aside, I am putting a shout out there into the universe for my pick of the week being... for me specifically, rereading the Chronicles of Amber, but also just to find the books that you love and to reread them, period. To just go back into something that is a book of your heart and to reread it. Because for me, this specific reread has been a really interesting experience of noticing things that I never noticed before, of realizing connections between things that I had never paid attention to before. It's a wonderful reminder that there can be things that you already know well that can keep giving you gifts, even as you go back to them. So there we have it. William, it has been lovely talking to you. If folks are interested in knowing more about the work that you support or getting in touch with you, how might they do that? How could they find you?
I don't make myself really easy to find. So you mentioned...
you must hunt.
yeah. So I don't hide my name. So if you look for my name on social media, you can find me on Blue Sky. I still have my account on Twitter because some people I followed are still there. Mm-hmm. And IMDb. So you can know what I'm doing through IMDb. But yeah, getting in touch with me. That I don't really use social media. I'm too old for that.
I'm starting to feel people. Very much the same way.
I follow people, but
I'm almost exclusively using it at this point to stay in touch with my friend in Japan, and to trade reels and memes with our Patreon backers.
There we go. That seems healthy. That seems fine. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, please, please consider sharing it with your friends on social media and give us a like or some stars on the platform or the podcatcher that you're listening to us on. Those likes help with the nasty little algorithm so new people can find us when searching for good stuff to listen to. If you'd like to keep up with the Functional Nerds on social media, the official podcast socials are as follows. At the-functional-nerds on Facebook. At functionalnerds_podcast on Instagram. Shut up. I couldn't get the same one. It just didn't work that way. So hush. And you know what? It's going to get worse here. And at the Functional Nerds bsky.bluesky, which is B-S-K-Y, dot social. I know, I couldn't keep a copacetic. I tried, but hush. Tracy and I have our own accounts. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. You can find us by searching, if you want me, it's ATFMB, because that's just my handle everywhere I go. Or you can search for Tracy Townsend and find Tracy on social as well. Our Patreon helps keep the lights on, and new episodes like this one coming out week after week, which we've been pretty good at. I mean, we're very consistent, so you might consider checking us out over at patreon.com/functionalnerds just to support the pod and help us out there, you know? It does help. Thanks again for listening. And I have one question for you before I go. Is it baseball season yet?
Mr. Carpiers.
You got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy, who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake. Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, hey, I really love what you do, I'm like, I'm sorry, do you know who I, like, I think you have me confused with someone else.
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.